It's time for the Blue Star Gas Rural Matters on 1430 KYKN. Now here's Jake.
Welcome back, everybody. Another Friday edition of Rural Matters right here, 1430 AM KYKN. As always, grateful for the station and grateful for the listenership of all of you. And I hope that your Friday is going fabulous as many of you get to enjoy the weekend. And in that, I'm really honored to have back on my program a friend of the program, friend of mine, a pastor I respect so much because I spent many a Sunday listening to him preach out in Petey. And we're talking rural church here, Pastor Daniel Russell, Petey Community Church. Pastor, welcome back to the program. We're going to get
Thank
it going.
You. Thank so you very much, you. Jake. You're an awesome friend. It's an honor to sit with you again today.
All right, Daniel, real quick, for those that aren't familiar with Petey and your church, and I said rural, you're out there in the woods, you've got a heifer farm, organic, right next door with a lot of trees all around you.
That's right, yeah.
Talk about Petey's beginning and then how you got involved, just kind of a Cliff Note version, and how the church is doing right now, Daniel.
Wow, okay, well, Cliff Note is right, because I believe Petey Church in its original form was in the 1800s. And I think it started around in the 1890s at some point, and it was kind of moved through different locations. But it's been where it's at. The current building, I think, was dedicated in like 1954-ish. And it's been there a long, long time. And I've been here. This is year 14 for me. There's been a little bit of a cultural shift over decades, where originally pastors would be there maybe 2, maybe 4 years was kind of long. So it's kind of a shift in church culture, at least in this tribe, for me to be there for 14 years in one spot.
Yeah, you're right about that, because the denomination I come from, the Christian Reformed denomination, a pastor has certain, people like to say, gifts, where they're really strong in certain areas of their ministry.
That's right. Yeah.
And then they really can bring that to a respective congregation at. And then by year number 6 or 7, if everything's going all right, another church could use whatever it is they have, and they feel like, you know what, I've done my thing here. But that's not always the case. There are some churches that are where they're hanging on. How do you, you know, for you to raise a family, to be able to have that stability, to not have to like pull up stakes and go to a new community,
yes.
Right?
Yes, that's actually been very helpful. And of course, when I moved to PD quite a long time ago, my wife and I moved there because we felt like God directed us to that community, that house at the time. And then he directed us. We were part of a different church in town. And I felt like he said, Daniel, that little white church down the road, that's your new church. And I thought, I wonder who they are. I had no idea. So we actually attended just as attendees for a while. And one morning I was having coffee with the pastor at the time. And he said, Daniel, I think I'm leaving. And I think you're the next pastor of this church. And so I didn't move to PD to become a pastor. I'd actually had an interaction with God many, many years previous when middle of the night, I was probably 14, 15, and I felt like God just spoke to me. It wasn't audible, but it was very, very clear. And he says, Daniel, I would like you to be a pastor. And that was the first time I recall saying no to God. I said, God, don't make me be one of those guys. They don't know how to change the oil in their cars. They don't have calluses. They're not real men. And because my whole family was loggers and chicken farmers and like guys that smelled like diesel. And that's what a man was. And then quite a while later, I felt like I just had to say, God, you know me better than me. And if you ask me again, I promise I will say yes. Which was fine because he wasn't going to. And then quite a few years later, I was suddenly asked, and it brought back a very poignant question. And of course, you know, today that I kept, made good on that promise. I said yes.
Let's people will say, well, what made that former pastor think that you were equipped to be a pastor, Daniel? Did you have seminary training or college background? Now I know your background, but maybe some other people are like going, wow, you just like throw you into the deep end of the pool without any type of experience. Talk about that.
Oh, that's a good question. So by some measures, I didn't. I hadn't been to seminary. I'd had a couple of years in a Christian college. I'd ended up helping to be a leader of a young adults group where we are just kind of boots on the ground, loving other young adults and just kind of learning what it means to grow the kingdom of God and to honor Jesus Christ as best we can. And then later on, I was a guitar player. I ended up being a worship leader at another church, which I absolutely loved, and just kind of started to be more and more involved. The odd thing that I didn't expect was that in a previous life, previous season of my life, I worked for the legislature. And yep. In the Oregon State Capitol, I worked several different jobs. And that's where I was working when I got invited to move over to pastoral work. And the thing that I could never have prepared or predicted or made happen is that the tasks I had at the Oregon legislature, all of those jobs translated one for one with the skills that I needed to be serving in a rural church. Very different work environment and kind of a different mission, but the actual boots on the ground skills were one for one. Leading meetings, organizing projects, communicating with people, that sort of thing was perfect. And so God saw that I needed training and he brought that training to me. So after I was in the position of being a pastor in a small rural church, that's when I started doing the more formal ministry school and things like that.
And I think it should be noted that your esposa, your wife Heidi, comes from pastoral family.
That's right.
And your brother-in-law also is a pastor. And of course, he's out in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's, you know, Heidi can help you out a lot.
I married actually
your father-in-law.
My John. Father-in-law, John, he's a retired Foursquare pastor. And so I married a PK, a preacher's kid.
Sure did.
And one of our early conversations when Heidi and I were just getting to know each other, and it was serious enough that like we thought this might be going somewhere. She looked at me out of the blue and said, just looked at me with those kind of knowing eyes and said, "Do not ever make me a preacher's wife."
Aw, Daniel. Aw.
And that was it. So I completely failed in that one because at the time I said, "Now don't you worry about that." I had a good, respectable government job. She was working as a ICU nurse at the time, and she was just a rock star nurse, totally brilliant. And then later on, when I had this conversation, very unexpected, from my pastor friend, and I had to go home and talk to my wife about this, and she had a different response than what I expected. She looked at me and she said, "Daniel, you were born for this."
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I would concur, the both of you.
I couldn't function without her.
No, nope.
It's there's very much a partnership. God puts people together and creates teams, and so I'm really thankful for the team he's given me with my wife.
So it was roughly 6 years ago when I was attending, and this was right at COVID.
That's right.
And you guys stayed open.
We did.
You honored people if they wanted, you know, so to speak. There was no protocol. You know, you want to wear the mask, you want to keep your distance, you don't want to shake hands or anything, but the church was open.
Now, full disclosure, we did shut down for a short time.
Yeah, but was that a time just to like everybody else where it's like, okay, this is new ground?
We're watching, is this real? So my background, my educational background is actually biology. And one of the reasons why I actually chose biology as my focus of study was I read a book called The Coming Plague. It was, I think, published in 1994. Laurie Garrett, I think, was the writer. And it's this brilliant book that tells the story of all these pandemics and epidemics and just these horrific things that have happened throughout human history. And the whole premise was, it's going to happen, but now we have international air travel. It's going to destroy the world when it happens next. And it was based on good science. So I spent years waiting for this to happen. And so when the world is erupting with all this information about COVID, I'm like, here it is. It's happening. So start to think through all these protocols and how we're going to do it. The challenge was, and what changed my view as we were moving forward, is if that thing happens, we're going to be seeing the consequences of a global pandemic. And really, boots on the ground, I started seeing more hype and less things to be afraid of. And
more hype.
More hype. And then there's a point when I'm just think, okay, we don't bow to hype. We want to walk in truth. And in every part of our life, we want to walk in truth. And so there was a point when we just said, you know what? this isn't what they're saying it is, and we're going to walk in truth, but we're also going to honor someone's choice. And so if somebody wants to wear a mask, bless them. If they don't want to wear a mask, bless them. It's okay. We're just going to be real.
I remember coming in, I believe the first Sunday, and simultaneously trying to go online and do a service online for those shut-ins or those who didn't want to come in, and then for those that were in. And it was such a surreal time, Daniel.
Yes, it was. Really strange. And actually, during that time, and I think this isn't unique to PD, I think it happened to a lot of churches, there was a mix of people that, because of legitimate fear, they stayed away, and some of them didn't come back. And they just built a life outside. And at the same time, there were other people that came in. And so there was a significant shift. And of course, you were part of the coming in part. And that's been a huge gift. So we ended up with just new relationships and a kind of a shift even in church culture. And I'm sure that we were enigmatic as an example of that, but I'm sure it was not unique to our community.
Amazing. We're going to continue this conversation. Daniel Russell, PD Church, Jake, Rural Matters. Hang on, we're just getting warmed up.
Back to the Blue Star Gas, Rural Matters on 1430 KYKN. Once again, here's Jake.
Welcome back, everybody. I hope you're having a glorious day. Beautiful time in Oregon right now, especially if you look east. And we're doing all right out here.
That's right.
No arguments there. My good friend, and I even consider a mentor whenever I can pick up the phone and catch up, Pastor Daniel. Daniel Russell at PD Church, you and your wife Heidi, beautiful family as well in that church.
Yeah, thank you. It's lovely to get to connect with you.
Oh, it's awesome. All right, Daniel, rural versus urban, 80, 90 to 100 people in your church dripping wet, if you will, on a good
Sunday.
That's right.
It's pretty right, yeah.
And where does a rural church stack up to, I mean, Daniel, what do you see when you see some of these huge, huge churches, whether on TV or you drive by one? What are your thoughts? How does that make you feel, especially at this stage in your life and as your pastoral career? You know,
right.
Where are you with that?
Okay, there's a couple layers to this. It's from the outside, I imagine it would be easy to think, okay, so the pastor in the small place sees the big place and says, man, if only. And there's certainly temptations. But what I see is I see different tools. You know, you can have little hammers and big hammers, and they're just good for different jobs. And so there's some strengths of the larger churches. They have resources and people. They can do things with a level of technical excellence. They can draw people with a massive talent, and they can really do big things, which is beautiful and powerful. There's also some risk and some things that make it a challenge. So, for example, I believe that the core of the kingdom is built in, first, a relationship with Jesus, and secondly, a relationship among people. And one of the things that having lots of talent and resources and space can do is you can end up substituting those things for relationship. Now, it's not wrong to have big resources and do big things. That's super cool. We need that tool. But the vast majority of churches in the world are really small, like 50 people, you know, as I can't remember what the exact numbers, it's been a while since I've been, but like 70, 75% of churches
just where you're at
are really quite small. Yeah. And then there's a smaller group just in the next window. And it's actually a very, very small percent of churches that are, you know, 500,000 or like these mega churches. And so it's about recognizing what the tool is good for. And so I would also add in this that we as Americans, we've grown through centuries of seeing like kind of the institutional church as the church. And in my conversations, I remind people around me pretty regularly that the church isn't a building. The church is not an organization. The church isn't an activity. The church is people. And so when, for example, I have a group that meets at my house on Tuesday nights, and we'll have, you know, close to 40 people every week. And that's church every bit as Sunday morning is church. And so I believe that what God is doing in this season and this time is he's building relationships so that we have expressions of the church that are visible inside buildings. That's super good. really, really holy and good, and we need it. But the day-to-day expression of the church is what's going to largely be transforming people's lives. So let's say I just deliver this amazing sermon, right? And someone is, and their heart is turned and it's super good. But until that person is living day to day, number one, pursuing God in a direct just conversation and biblical study and walking rightly. And then secondly, walking in relationship with somebody who's going to be discipling them and just living life together. Until we get that piece, I can blow the socks off of whatever with a great message. But the real boots on the ground is living life together down in the trenches. And so one of the advantages of small churches and small, even home groups and these expressions is that's where you get life on life. You know, if you have 500 people in a room and they're listening and experiencing something really cool, that does not necessarily allow them to be transparent and vulnerable in the way that brings about life change.
You bring up some interesting things. You see the very well-known mega churches, and some of the pastors, they get locked into name it and claim it. What do you see, when you see that, Daniel? If you have, what's your response to that? What do you tell believers as far as how they respond to name it and claim it? That's not really where we should be going, is it? Or what are your feelings on that?
I think there's a dangerous territory on everywhere. So one of the themes in my life, especially over the last few years, is I see both politically and in Christian culture, is there's like this imaginary line. And we're invited to find ourselves on this line. And maybe on one side might be kind of some rule-following Baptist-y sort of group that is so dangerous to name names, that might not accept or believe that there's anything supernatural at all. And then you might go to the other side where everything's supernatural and everything's like a vision and things. So what I'm finding is that there's this invitation and even a pressure to identify yourself on a line. And from what I can tell, Jesus never fit in lines very well. And it's not that everybody's equally wrong or right or everybody should just get along. There is truth. But I find that the necessity is to begin to parse out truth a little bit more narrow. So, for example, you have big name pastors and big name ministry people in all kinds of different stripes. Some of them are conservative. Some of them are, I don't know what you call, like liberal. They're just all over the map. But I would invite number one, some compassion. Because we can't see the amount of pressure that these people are under. When someone is in an organization with massive, massive budgets and pressure and opportunity, it's like they're a rock star. And so they have all of the pressures and the opportunities that a rock star has. But then in addition to that, they also have pressure about, are you right? Are you wrong? How is your integrity and stuff? Now, we want to see people walking with the absolute highest level of integrity in any of these places. And that's not even a question. But I find myself feeling, on one hand, cautious about leveling criticism against them. But at the same time, oh my word, I wouldn't... There's such danger in the place of being in such power and limelight. And what I would hope to see is that when somebody is at that level, that they would have a very, very tight team around them that can help encourage them, call them out when they need to be called out. Because I believe that it's a potentially very dangerous position. The other one that I see is when someone is delivering like a word from God. For example, I believe that it'd be really easy. I have a lot of pressure to always have the new whatever thing that's coming. And then I think it would be really easy to begin to declare something that because there's a demand for it, there's pressure for it. And if you look at scripture, it looks like even the people that were identified even as prophets and people, God would deliver them a powerful word and they would deliver it to the people around them. And that might be it. It doesn't appear to be that there was just a steady flow of everything always new all the time. Now, I personally believe that God speaks, and I believe that we can have engaging conversations with the Lord. In fact, I think we're supposed to. But I also find that in my life, there's a lot of the times that the Lord is saying, I'm hearing the same thing over and over again, and it's because it hasn't sunk into me yet. So I guess backing up, I'd say there's great risk when someone is in such a focused position of influence and resources. And I would invite, if there's believers out there, pray for these people that they can remain right with God and they can remain kingdom minded and not just get distracted by just the brightness of the lights and their own wonderfulness, right? So there's a huge gift in being small.
Yeah, that's all right. You know, and I'll finish with this. I remember reading a book on Billy Graham and his circle around him, which he kept for a very long time. They would check every hotel room before he walked in, make sure there was nobody trying to set him up. Now, I mean, security was really smart and tight for him because he was so well known and it would be too easy to be entrapped and get sucked in. And I think to his credit, by God's grace, that, you know, he had family.
That's
of
right.
Other things.
Yeah.
He had family, but he did well with that. Pastor Daniel Russell, PD Church. Jake, Real Matters. Hang on after the news. We'll be right back.
The conversation continues on the Blue Star Gas Rural Matters of 1430 KYKN.
Rural Matters back. Jake with you. Thanks so much for listening. The barn door is wide open. And come on in before we close it. No, we don't close it. It's all good.
It's a sunny day. You don't need to close the doors today.
No, you don't. And have the windows open, too. It's great to be here. Pastor Daniel Russell, PD Church, a friend of the program, back with me. And I'm really glad that we were able to get together now. There's a couple of things we want to continue on for the back half of the program. Oregon and Washington, within, say the past 20, 25 years, maybe even further, maybe a lot of it has to do with our politics. I don't know. Not the most churched areas if they were to rate states and regions.
That's true.
We're not the Bible Belt out here.
No.
And we don't seem to get that kind of a label on us. As a matter of fact, it's more kind of the opposite when Portland likes to say, keep it weird. And they certainly do a good job of that. And I'm not trying to be mean either. It's just, that's what you want to be.
If that's the goal, they're succeeding, then I don't know.
They're doing a good job of it at this point. But, Pastor, even looking at PD and driving around on Sundays, I get a sense that parking lots, particularly after COVID, because that, we talked about that earlier, a little bit of a resurgent. Are people finding out that the institutions that we put so much into that aren't necessarily bad, whether it's sports,
right,
entertainment, and all of that stuff, and they seem to sink themselves.
And that's a fact.
I think Golden Globes comes to mind right now. but things are kind of, I feel like there's an uptick because the stuff that we've been putting a lot of our brain candy into isn't necessarily panning out the way we think it should or has or would.
I think that you're pointing in a solid direction. So there's a lot of things in our culture that have moved towards inauthenticity or just living in one's imagination, whimsical, like AI generation videos. The fact that our movie industry and storytelling is so effective at creating things that are false or like imaginary, it's just sometimes it's just good movie making. But I believe that as a culture, there is a growing hunger for something that is real. And because the folks that are younger than you and I think they've grown up with so much fake, they're not impressed with fake anymore.
Okay.
And there's also, I think, a lot of substitutions for real relationship. And so, for example, I think people our age and maybe the next generation below us really got pulled into the fakeness of the internet. And in my experience, I see people always pointing at the young people that are addicted to this. there's some truth to that. But I believe it's actually everybody. Every human is subject to be pulled into this fake world that's around us. It's easy, it's cheap, feels good. But what I'm seeing is a growing hunger for authentic relationship. And I've had a lot of conversations with people specifically describing how hungry they are for real relationship. And so, in fact, just a couple hours ago, I was sitting around a table with a group of guys, and that's the thing that's coming up. In fact, I would speak, are you familiar with, there was a movie came out a few years ago called The Jesus Revolution. Mm-hmm. You remember that? And that
Greg Laurie.
Yeah, exactly.
And Greg Laurie movie.
Yeah, exactly. And sort of the story of Chuck Smith and Lonnie Frisbee and some things that happened in California. It wasn't exclusive to California. They did a good job of portraying this. But one of the things that I noticed after watching that film is the whole movie is about pressing against Christian culture, where they're showing that the, for lack of a better term, that's the unsavable people, the people that had been rejected by Christian culture, became the people that were the core of what God was drawing upon and hearts that were getting changed, which is why it's a compelling story. I believe that we are coming into a season in history for our country where once again, God is going to go to the unsavable people. And the places where Christian culture has put up the walls and said, get away, Jesus is mine, not yours. God's going to tear that down because he came to seek and save the lost. And so if you look around, who are the people that the Christian people say are unsavable? Those are the people that I believe are the ones that have tasted enough of the world and they've tasted enough of brokenness that they're saying it doesn't taste good anymore. And so they're going to be coming into and saying, well, where'd Jesus go? Who's this Jesus guy? And when they meet a God who loves them and they are able to get past the religious aspect that tastes bad to them, for good reason, they're going to discover a God who loves them, and they're going to discover that truth is actually helpful, not harmful. They're going to discover that they can have right relationship, good relationship, first with God and then with each other, and they're going to discover the community that they were hunting all along and couldn't get.
Yeah.
Because I believe a community that's built on love God and then love your neighbor is going to be a good community. And if we can walk that out, I think that's an advantage. So in the Pacific Northwest, as much as there's, we can point at like darkness and all these things, and that's real, but it also creates a contrast. And so a lot of people might be, they might not have ever tasted a Christian culture. And there's other places where Christian culture rises up and it's more or less just as, it's hard to say these things, just as lacking in Christ as any other culture. And so our mission is if we encounter the living God and we encounter him authentically, that's going to be attractive to everybody.
And you're not going to water it down either.
It doesn't work to water it down. No. And that's actually one of the things I think has caused us great
inauthentic
harm.
All right. We've got a couple minutes in this segment, Daniel, and I want to put two questions to you. And then we can carry over to the next segment. We saw the invasion of the Minneapolis church.
You know, that's right.
With all of the stuff going on there. And my question to you is, what were your thoughts when you saw that? And should churches, we all believe that we're saved by, God is watching over us and we're, protected by the Lord. But what about security at a church? Somebody wants to go to your church and they're thinking, granted, anything can happen. What's your thoughts on church security, Daniel?
Okay. So in Scripture, we have this idea of truth and love. And I think if you have something that you're calling truth, but there's no love in it, then it's not really truth. And if you have love, but there's no truth in it, it's really not love. I don't think you can truly separate these things, because if God is the source and the embodiment of truth and love, they're the same thing. So here's the thing is... sometimes in our culture, we take that concept I just pointed at, and we say that love requires no boundaries, and boundaries are unloving. And I would actually disagree with that. Because if we go all the way through Scripture and the Hebrew Scriptures and then even New Testament Scriptures, what we're seeing is a lot of information, not just about faith, but what it looks like to live it out, including boundaries, right? Don't have a relationship with this person. Treat this person this way. Don't treat this person that way. And if you look at, a lot of people criticize Old Testament law and this description, but a lot of it was be kind to the people who are the foreigners that come into your land. Be treat each other with respect. Don't steal stuff. Don't kill people. Don't hurt people. There's these sort of boundaries. So in one of the things that I'm seeing is that there's a pressure inside Christian culture from not every direction, but some directions to ignore boundaries. And so one of the things that the United States being built on a nation that identifies as law as the core, I would expect that when people violated the boundaries of this church, that the system around would say that's not okay, and they would actually bring charges against the folks that violated this, because there was no, hey, we're going to come join you, hey, we're honoring, hey, we're, there was nothing polite. It was, from what I can tell, it was pre-planned. It was intended to be destructive. It was intended to be disruptive, and the people that the point that they're making, I believe, landed falsely on the people that were in that church.
Backfired too, I think.
I think so
and
too.
I think that as I watched video of it, that pastor did a heck of a job. But I think as a parent, if I were 35 years old and my two kids were in the nursery or in the Sunday school, I'm gonna be a little upset, and I'm gonna break through whatever those people were doing, Daniel.
Absolutely.
And we need to be cognitive of protecting those that are in our congregations, and some churches are stepping that up. That is for sure on that end. So with me, Daniel Russell, PD Church, Jake Real Matters, coming back for the final blazing segment after this.
Back to the Blue Star Gas Real Matters on 1430 KYKN. Once again, here's Jake.
Jake, running my mouth off full time, which is a lot of fun. I'm rarely at a loss for words, Pastor
I have Daniel. Never known you to lack words, ever.
I know. It bodes well for me sometimes. And so, listen, we've got just a little over 10 minutes. Daniel, what about knowing what we believe in the Constitution, in both nationally and statewide? Talk about that. You and I were visiting about that.
A little bit. So one of the things that I don't know, but I suspect to be the case, is I think there's a lot of folks, even in government positions, that probably raise their hand, you know, I hereby swear I'm going to, you know, honor the U.S. Constitution, the Oregon Constitution, that very likely have never read it. And I've also running in some conservative circles. I hear a lot of references to constitutionality, and we, you know, stand on the Constitution. But one of the things that I'm growing more aware of and is that I don't think we're very well educated on the Constitution. And also for me, I've always thought about it as being the U.S. Constitution. But Oregon State has got a constitution that closely mirrors the U.S. Constitution, some little differences. And I'm realizing that there's an imperative that if we declare that to be our foundation, have we read it?
Well, you know, and you bring up what Charlie Kirk was doing a
yes.
lot. I mean, that guy was pulling it. I mean, this guy obviously read a lot, but he was bringing that out
to
the college students and to me, for that matter.
Absolutely. Charlie was a really honorable man, and he was doing really beautiful work. And I find myself challenged in some of this stuff because I've read this stuff over time. But even thinking about coming and talking with you today, I'm realizing I need to go back. I need to read all of this stuff again. And the other part is I'm pointing at Constitution as like the foundation of U.S. and even Oregon law. But for me, there's even a deeper foundation, and that's the biblical foundation, because I believe the highest authority is not the government. Highest authority isn't what I want. The highest authority goes back to the God who created all of this. And so if there's any truth, even constitutional truth, it's going to be rooted in a universal truth. Actually, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., he actually wrote that in his Birmingham jail letters. He was making an appeal to the law of God as superior to government law. It's a fascinating letter if somebody hasn't read it. But I believe it's really important for us to go back and recognize what our foundation is. Because in a world where if we don't have a foundation, and I think a lot of folks aren't clear on what their foundation is, they can be moved around really, really, really easy. And one thing I've noticed over time is because there's such an effort to manipulate people, and I'll say politically, and I would even submit that smart political people or even government people, even foreign government people, they will leverage things, including Christian faith or other faiths, and try to bend it for a political purpose. Inside the conversation about faith, I don't know if faith people recognize sometimes that the voices that are pushing them aren't other faith voices. Sometimes those voices are political voices with a political purpose trying to bend. So we need to be really clear on what our foundation is. And then as we move forward, I've found people that I was inclined to agree with what they said because I liked it and because it generally aligned with my worldview. And then later, I would find that it wasn't really all the way true. And so what I'm finding is I would like to be able to parse out truth a little bit more carefully. So, for example, there's been some shootings where some people died from ICE agents. And so then people become super polarized on this stuff. Either ICE is like, you know, these guys are hellish and murderers, or the other people are stupid and dumb and awful. And I believe it's imperative that we look at these sort of things from a position of both compassion and truth. And so it doesn't always lay out nice and clean, and we can hate these people and love these people. If we're going to be aligning with foundational truth, we get to parse things a little bit more carefully.
That's a good message that needs to be talked about. And it is so easy. So many voices coming at us.
Absolutely.
So many different analogies and everything. And we've got to know where our foundation is. All right, you and I were talking a little bit. We've got a few minutes.
So okay.
I'm gonna push you here. Talking about some of the AI stuff that you're discovering, Daniel. We've got 5 minutes.
5 minutes. Okay. So there is some wild stuff developing right now. I've heard it's just in the last couple of weeks. There was an AI bot that was just released that anybody can install on their computer. And it was originally called a Claude bot. And then there was some copyright discussion. So it got moved to called Molt bot. It's using a lobster as kind of its symbol. But then one of the interesting developments was basically a social media platform was created, kind of looked like Reddit style. And you can actually look it up. It's called moltbook.com. You can find it. But the significance is it was an AI media platform or social media platform that only AIs can post to. A human can look at it and read it, but only AIs can post. And so you can stand back, and it was, a couple hundred thousand AI bots were part of this. Now, I looked it up like 2 days ago, is 1.5 million AI bots are on this, generating threads, having conversations, debating stuff. And there is, in theory, like no humans involved with this. And I'm finding the AI technology is advancing so fast. We have got to wrap our heads around this. There's so many conversations about this, about what's real, what's not. And I believe it's a mixed bag. Ultimately, AI is like the next really powerful tool.
You did really well. You did really well. So how should we approach this? You can't get away from it. It's
no.
here to stay. And it's here to get even bigger and more bold. And so what, you know, Daniel, you and I were talking about where I've even got to watch my phone where scams come over.
All the time.
And I get text messages that I think are from the United States Postal Service. And I come to think, no, you guys didn't try and drop a package off. There's no sticker on the door.
Mm-mm.
For technophobes, for older folks, this is all so new and so scary. What do we got to look out for, Daniel? Do we got to make sure we hire our young high schooler to go through all our stuff who are better than we are? How do we do this?
I think I'm honestly asking this question very actively in my world because I find myself really pulled in two directions. One is this is a technology that will not go away. So let's say even at a national level, U.S. government somehow says, okay, we're going to shut this down. It's too dangerous. All of the other nations in the world are not going to shut it down, and everybody's running as fast as they can. And so by necessity, I don't think it can be turned off. It must be dove into by somebody, and it's going to be part of our world no matter what. It just is. And so to that end, to be cogent, to be able to think about it and be aware and engage at some level, I think is more of a necessity than what we'd get. On the other hand, I'm finding myself driven, and I think if there will be folks, and I think it's really important that some folks just unplug, just go away, turn it off, walk. I'm finding myself at times even having to leave my phone behind, go for a walk, clear my head.
Yeah.
Because the thing that I think particularly younger generations who never lived without this, it's like a fish in water. You can't see the impact of what it's doing to you and shaping your thinking. There's got to be room to turn all that stuff off and sit face to face, like with my friend Jake, and just have a conversation.
I'm a good guy.
And we don't have some other thing popping in, you know?
We got a minute and a half, and this is something I'm trying to live by a lot now. Are our best days ahead? They're not behind us, are they? Do we have good days ahead, Daniel?
Absolutely. There are waves. Everybody tends to think about the world as even in this long, slow nosedive or this really steep climb. And the truth is, and it's going to have waves of great, waves of hard, but our good days ahead are in our position if we are reconciled with the God who made us, the one who has eternity. That's where you're guaranteed the very best is up ahead. And so it's our posture before God is in and with Jesus Christ. That's what's going to make it or break it.
And you feel that way. And your kids, you know, you've got a young family. You want them to have a decent life. We want our, one day you'll be a grandpa, you and Heidi.
Lord willing, yes.
Yeah, I mean, and we don't want to think just because of what we're seeing this past year.
No.
It's been rough.
Things have been up and down in history, and we have reason for optimism even now. Even now,
rural churches have reason for optimism.
Absolutely,
yeah. What gets you up in the morning, Daniel? Real quick,
the thing that gets me up in the morning is I get to talk with God again, and I get to hang out with my wife and see my family. And the third thing is I'm wanting to see lives change. I want to see people who are in darkness brought to a place of wholeness and knowing the God who made them.
All right, real quick, when are Sunday services at PD?
Okay. So we officially start at 10 o'clock. We've got a corporate prayer time about 9:30, and we just gather, and we're not really heavily structured because the mission is to do what God tells us to do. So I have a plan, we do our thing, but we're always seeking to say, okay, God, what are you doing today?
Exciting time for you guys, right?
Absolutely.
And your kids are doing great. Your wife's doing well.
I am super proud of my children right now.
And you should be. You know, every time I see you guys, I think of the old Partridge Family show where they had the big partridge and it's just like boop, 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 because there's quite a few. How many are there? How many kids?
So I've got seven children.
Yeah.
My second is in Florida in a school, ministry school right now. And then actually my niece came to live with us. So we just added one for the season, which is great.
Daniel Russell, PD Church. God bless. Thanks for coming. Jake, Rural Matters. We'll be back. Thanks.
This has been the Blue Star Gas Rural Matters every Friday at noon on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.